There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Welcome to the Max Mike Film Studies Institute. Here at the MMFSI, we are guided by our scientifically proven approach to film study, the Film Paradox Principle, or FPP. Though on the surface this may seem like utter jibber-jabber, I promise you that it is not only sound, it's vision, airy. The basics are simple. If a film is bad, it's actually good. Why is this? Films with, shall we say, opportunities, such as The Room, Highlander 2, and Robot Monster, while lesser in quality, have still managed to take those opportunities and make them strengths. Yes, the acting in The Room is remarkably amateur, some might even say terrible, but can you truly say that it is less entertaining in its own way than that of, say, Kramer vs. Kramer? Yes, the horror of Robot Monster resembles nothing more than a gorilla with a diving helmet on its head. But is it not also true that, seen in broad daylight, the xenomorph from Alien resembles nothing more than a basketball player in a dark suit and hat? It's true, and so simple, and so are we. To show you how well our theory works, we're proud to offer you the once-in-a-lifetime chance to invest a small percentage of your overall worth to Max Mike Movies! Believe it or not, all of this hoo-ha is relevant to the discussion we're going to have today about the film Billionaire Boys Club. It's the low grosser of 2018, and as such is the bottom in our series called Tops and Bottoms. But you know who's tops around here? That'd be our host, Max, stop calling me that, Levine. What'd you say from on high, Max?
Why do people keep giggling about the name of this series? I don't get it. I just don't get it.
And down here, nearly bottoming out, is just little old me, Mike, don't tell Max what this means, Luce. Well, enough about us. Let's get to you.
Poll question.
Last week's question was a biggie. We asked what your favorite superhero movie is, and here's what you had to say. Vince, the captain of all Canucks, it says so on his license, wrote, quote, "This is a little obscure now, but the 2012 film Chronicle by first-time director Josh Trank is a superhero film that went in the direction I was looking for. The premise is as unrealistic as most superhero films, but the consequences of three teens, one of them with serious issues, TM, give the film a layer of believability lacking in big-budget films. The effects are good and sparingly used, and I liked the smaller scale of it and thinking about what might actually happen if some random people, especially kids, were to get superpowers," end quote. You saw that one, didn't you, Max?
I did. I thought it was really good, and it is very, it's very original seeming, and it's very believable apart from the superpowers part.
Well, I mean, that's the pill you swallow when you go to see a superhero movie.
Sure.
Yeah. No, I liked it very much, too.
Nice one, Vince.
Yeah. It's not that lesser because it's one of my favorites. There. Haha. Thanks, Vince. Swinging the rig over to the Facebook, we have Tyler Stewart and his answer, quote, "The Dark Knight. Everything else being equal, the quality of a superhero film depends on the quality of the supervillain. Heath Ledger's Joker was second to none," end quote. Second to none, but Batman.
Second to none. Hey, Cesar Romero, come on!
Yeah!
Yeah!
Show some
love.
And
what about Scarecrow's brain?
Okay, thanks, Tyler. Matt McStravick sent, quote, Oh, Mr. Carter, Mr. Carter. He didn't actually say
that. Flawless impression.
Sure, yeah, I know. He said, something I can contribute to, Captain America the Winter Soldier. The glib description is to say 3 days of the Condor with super soldiers, and it would certainly be an apt one. Yes, it's got all these super-type moments and effects, but the plot felt deeper and the pacing was an excellent balance of spy thriller and superhero movie, end quote. And an excellent answer that is, too. Thanks, Matt.
Yes.
I'm trying to think. Cap didn't suffer from the bad movie syndrome. The other ones did he? All the Cap movies were good.
Well, all the Cap movies with Chris Evans, if you mean the current ones. If you're talking about Reb Brown or...
No, you know what I mean.
That's true.
Sam Wilson got really the shaft because I really liked him as the Falcon, but they didn't... I heard that the writing and stuff wasn't good in the new one.
It was not. They didn't know what to do with him. Captain America Brave New World is just embarrassing. But
yeah,
Captain Steve Rogers isn't in it. So yeah. Anyway.
Well, thanks, Matt. Noted journalist Harry McCracken posted, quote, either Batman, the Adam West one, or Superman 2. I could watch either one an infinite number of times, end quote. Ah, the classics.
Some days you just can't get rid of a bomb.
Except that movie. Oops. Thanks, Harry.
Oh, hello.
Stephen Kellner answered, quote, wow, tough one. I'm leaving out all the animated ones here for the nonce. When Superman came out, it was magical to me as a 15-year-old comics fan because Christopher Reeve really felt like Superman right down to rescuing a cat from a tree, even though Lois was annoyingly stupid. And I got much of that same feeling from the new Superman, including a much better Lois. Very true.
Yeah.
The 2022 The Batman was a great depiction of the Dark Knight, including his evolution from a depressed emo fighter. Wait, he was emo or he was fighting emos? Whatever.
Yep, it was him. I'm going to get you, Caped Crusader.
Not that emo.
Oh, okay.
I think I'll go to the Batcave.
Oh, Batman will die tonight.
You know, fighting that emo, I might. Anyway.
Yeah.
His evolution from a depressed emo fighter to the inspiration he was always potentially was. I agree with Tyler that The Dark Knight was a hell of a depiction of Batman versus the Joker, but I have a serious problem with the full arc, including making Bruce an outright idiot in the last movie of the trilogy. I have watched Doctor Strange multiple times, and I like it because of the genuine and believable development of the character, as well as the incredible faithfulness to Steve Ditko's creation, except, of course, that Doctor Strange was white and so was the Ancient One. Wasn't Doctor Strange white in the comic book?
Yes.
The Ancient One was...
The Ancient One was Tibetan.
Which side of racism would you put him on?
Yeah.
Yeah, in the comics.
Yeah, pretty much he was just this side of no ticky, no shirty.
Yeah. But on the other hand, there was a much better Wong. Definitely agree with that. Wong in the movies is great.
Yeah, it just kind of still throws me that the actor's name is actually Wong.
Hey!
Benedict Wong, that's his name.
But in this case, two Wongs does make a white. Wait, all right.
Okay,
was right there.
You're sleeping with Bumpy tonight.
Oh. Anyway, he continues, but I think I'd have to go for The Avengers, which not only has distinct and well-crafted individual heroes, many of whom go through their own character arcs, but the everyone comes together story. I'm an absolute sucker for that kind of story, and it was done beautifully. F Joss Whedon, but this was his peak accomplishment in movies, end quote. Yeah, Joss Whedon is problematic
he's a bit of a problem, yeah.
Great list, though. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you.
Tony Kellner. Gee, I wonder if they're related. She sent, quote, The Avengers. Love the story, the acting, the directing, even if the director has proven to be a lousy person. My only note is I wish there were more women characters, end quote. Yeah. Sadly, the answer all too often is, I wish there were more women characters. Thanks, Tony. Dave. Offered, quote, one evening in Tokyo when I was young and feeling down, a show called Darkman came up on the TV and it totally hit the spot. I have such good memories of the film as perfect for the occasion, I have never dared to check it out again for fear of disturbing the memory. I am also a big fan of Mystery Men.
Oh, yes. That one's so much fun.
I really like Janine Garofalo in that. Again, why is there not more Janine Garofalo?
But don't know.
I mean, that has a huge cast in it. But anyway, he continues. And I think I liked V for Vendetta, but can't remember much about it. Perhaps it will come back to me in November, end quote. Well, perhaps it will. Thanks, Dave.
Maybe perhaps around the 5th.
Yeah, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. Do you smell smoke? Matt Reisman had one or two. Quote, I'm absolutely going to go animated for this one. The Incredibles. While a lot of superhero movies are difficult to rewatch due to oversaturation and genre fatigue, the way The Incredibles mixes James Bond's 60s superhero themes helps alleviate that a lot. The character design is also phenomenal. Batman Mask of the Phantasm and Megamind are solid runners-up for me. Mask of the Phantasm is the best theatrical Batman movie, and I've got to watch that at some point. I've never seen it.
It is very good.
And Megamind is Will Ferrell's best comedic role. If we have to go live action, 1990s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It synthesizes both the original comic and the pop culture perception better than anything except possibly Superman the movie, but I'm too young to be sure of the pop culture perception of Superman in the 70s, end quote. For Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, let's pour one out for Donatello. He was recently killed in the comic. Wow.
That's sure he'll dark. Stay dead forever.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
As for Superman in the 70s, huge. Dynamically massive. Huge until Superman massive. 3 came out, and then he wasn't so huge. But
there were only two Superman movies.
Just like the Indiana Jones films and so on. And
yep, there's only two Godfather movies. Yep.
Cool. Animated choices. Thanks for all of those, Matt.
Nice.
Nick Hoffman was next with, quote, "I think you know I have a very hard time with this one." Okay. "I loved the first Thor. I thought Straczynski's script captured the whole essence of Thor's comic. Loved Cap 1, was always a favorite book. Iron Man was the first one I thought could be done well. The Avengers really surprised me. And of course, Nolan's Dark Knight arc is an all-time favorite. Yeah. I'd have a much easier time picking my least favorite," end quote. Well, you might just get that chance someday. Thanks, Nick. Dan Schaefer wrote, quote, "Like Nick Hoffman, I would have a lot of difficulty picking a favorite. I am ludicrously non-critical about comic book movies. Good, stupid, escapist brain candy. Black Panther and Guardians of the Galaxy up at the top or near the top of my list," end quote. And tops they are. Thanks, Dan. Black Panther was really, really good.
Oh, so good.
Charles Forsyth posted, quote, "The first Deadpool. It was a passion project of Ryan Reynolds. They slashed the budget so the production had to put every dollar on the screen. The result was a fast-paced movie that didn't waste any screen time and in Deadpool style made fun of itself," end quote. And think of the billions it made. Thanks, yeah, Charles.
True.
That's why we have three. And I think I heard they're doing a fourth one.
Oh, that I had not heard.
I think I did.
I'm wondering if he's in Doomsday.
I wouldn't if I were them. Wrong tone. Besides, he's not that effective when you look at it. I mean, sure, he gets the guy down, but it's like one guy. Anyway.
Yeah.
Thanks, Charles. From the old mail sack, we have Bill O'Lading Max.
Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading, Bill O'Lading.
Thank you. Who scrobe, quote, "Gotta go with Marvel's Black Panther 2018. The depictions of Wakanda, T'Challa, and his family, it's all just so joyous and beautiful. The physical feats of Daring Do, the battles, the complex villains, the rhinoceros. And who doesn't love the Wakanda salute and its widespread real-world adoption by black athletes? It's all the more moving given Chadwick Boseman is now passed. It's a Marvel masterpiece. Runners-up, The Dark Knight, 2008, with Heath Ledger's performance for the ages. X-Men 2, 2003. Have you ever considered not being a mutant? And Superman 1978, Christopher Reeve will forever and ever be Superman, end quote.
Yeah.
Lots of good stuff, as always. Thanks,
excellent.
Bill. Yeah, egg salad. I hate egg salad. Lastly, we got that queen of the blinking red light. Please don't take your love to town. Doris Hempelmeyer on our hotline, if Max will just mop up the drool.
Yes. Come on, Doris. Tell me what you'd be wearing as a superhero. A lot of spandex, maybe thigh-high boots.
Hello, Max. Max Movies. Hi, Max. This is Doris Hempelmeyer here to answer this week's poll question. I got three answers for you for what my favorite superhero movie is. The first one is the original Superman with that guy who ended up in a wheelchair. My brain just went dead. Anyway, it's just so sweet and innocent and it's just nice. I like it. The second one, the original Avengers, the first movie, because I just, you know, that whole line about doing Shakespeare in the Park cracks me up every single time. The third one, you probably won't agree with, brand new, but it just tickled me. And I'm just going to say Masters of the Universe. I thought it was a stitch. Anyway, those are my three answers. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your week. And I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
Well, Superman and the Avengers, and I think she meant to say Christopher Reeve. That's my guess.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
Yep. Good choices and clearly supported by others.
Yeah. Thanks, Doris.
Nice.
But what about you, Maxwell? Which superhero movie takes the cat from your tree?
Oh, I couldn't say. I am small and of no account.
No.
I would have to. All right. I am large and of no account. Let's see.
Well, the no account part, I'll go with that.
I've always, of course, like a lot of people, I have a real soft spot for the 1970s Superman, you know, Christopher Reeves.
Yeah.
That was the first movie where a superhero looked good, that it worked. You know, that whole, you will believe a man can fly?
Yeah.
Maybe, but at least I wasn't sitting there going, I can see the wires.
Yeah, which you couldn't.
So I go with that. I've got to go with the people, as people said, The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, purely because of Heath Ledger and Black Panther. But you know, one that I also like, it doesn't get as much love, it was the first real Marvel superhero movie of the modern era, and that was Blade. The first Blade.
The
movie.
First Blade was good. We won't talk about Blade 3.
Blade 2 wasn't bad, you know?
The first film I actually fell asleep during was Blade 3, and I forced Blade myself to because I hated it that much.
Yeah.
Sorry, oh,
what
Patton.
A waste.
Because I know he listens.
Patton Oswalt, he's in there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, we know Patton listens every week.
Every week. Ever since we did every that series week. On his stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. What about you, Mike? What's your favorite superhero movie?
I mean, I will give a runners up to The Incredibles because The Incredibles is such an amazingly well told story. I like Matt. I love the design. I love the arc. The poor mom. I am getting very tired of it's always the husband's fault thing. That's become a trope that's overdone. But you can understand where he's coming from, too. Almost everybody in that movie has a little arc. It's really, really well done. But like Vince, I really like Chronicle. It feels like what a real person would do if they got stuck with superpowers real quick. But my number one has to be Iron Man because it started the whole Marvel Universe.
I never
thought they could do it. Robert Downey Jr. is perfect. And that film was just, I remember people like when he comes out at the end, he's like, so I have to tell you. Nah, the hell with that. I'm Iron Man. Everyone in the theater was like cheering and stuff. It was great. And it really captured the character. I mean, it had a Jebediah Stane in it, in that stupid warmonger suit thing. And it still works really well. It was just so much fun. So, yeah, I'm going to go with those. But
my big disappointment in the Iron Man movie is they did not use the music in the trailer.
Oh,
where
God.
He first shows up and they're playing Iron Butterflies, I Am Iron Man. It's sitting right there!
I thought you were going to say, I'm so sorry that they didn't use the original theme from the cartoon.
Oh, that's good too. I mean, they could have at least played that in the credits.
Iron Man does whatever an Iron
whatever
Can.
Whatever an Iron Can, yes.
presses
pants.
Presses
ties.
Suits, presses flies any size. Look out, here comes the Iron Man. That was mine. Anyway, thank you tons for those answers. They make us feel all jiggy inside. What would be even more jiggy is for you to answer this poll question. What is the last great movie you saw in the theater? And why is it great? There's so much to choose from, so won't you? We'll repeat all that stuff at the end of the show. But next, I'd like to know, Max, seen anything good?
Actually, I watched a video with our friend Chuck that I thought was entertaining.
Okay.
It was called Dark Dungeons.
Okay.
It's on YouTube. It's like 3 or 4 parts. It's based on the Jack Chick tract.
Oh, dear.
His famous anti-D&D tract, which when read is hilarious, when watched is hysterical.
Oh.
And apparently the guys who did it hoodwinked the Jack Chick estate.
Bullpen?
they got money from Jack Chick's estate to make this movie saying, oh yeah, it's going to be a tribute.
Uh-huh.
And technically, if you look at it, it is very faithful. It's just not very well done.
Well, neither are the Chick comics. Oops!
Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
If you've never seen them... These were little comic books
like
they
were
not even pocket size. They were much smaller than that. And they used to leave them on bus seats and stuff like that. And the idea was to show you how terrible your life was without Jeebus and how you should follow whatever branch of Christianity was in the Jack Chick comics. And there was tons of them telling you how horrible literally everything you like is.
Yeah, so. People would talk about how Jack Chick was the most published comic artist in history. A lot of that, I think, is because they gave away the comics. I don't know if he ever sold any of them.
Oh, no. You know, you don't pay for... I mean, you do now because you probably can't get them. They're probably collector's items, but hopefully none of the money goes to the estate. But
So that was my big thing that I saw. What about you? What'd you see?
Well, First thing I watched was, actually, I've watched two documentaries and then a big movie. The first documentary I watched was, actually not a documentary, I'm sorry, it is a regular film. It is Art School Confidential. It is a film by Terry Zwigoff, who is the guy who did Crumb, if you've never seen it. Crumb is terrific. Oh, yeah. He also did a version of a cartoonist named Daniel Clowes' film Ghost World.
See our entire episode on Ghost World.
Yeah. And this is also by Daniel Clowes. Didn't really care for it. It's very kind of disjointed and wasn't really much of a favorite. I then watched a documentary on Brian Eno called Eno. And interestingly, you don't see the same film twice. There is an algorithm written by hand, no AI, that reassembles the film every time you watch it. So there are literally trillions of versions of the film. And you'd think, this is so disjointed, it's impossible to watch. It's not. At least the version I saw wasn't.
All right.
And Brian Eno, I mean, he's worked with some amazing people. David Bowie, U2, Talking Heads, amongst many others, Roxy Music. And it was actually very interesting. And he's a very interesting guy. In some ways more down to earth than you think. But the big film I went to see was The Odyssey.
Ah, okay. No spoilers. I don't want to know how it ends.
The story's been around for thousands of years. If you don't know, too bad.
I must not have gotten much play. I mean,
I will not give too much away. I will say, if you are able to see it in the theater, I do recommend it. Nolan does like to use the screen to its full advantage, and there's big things in this.
Big things.
I think the acting in general ranges from very good to excellent. There isn't an aspect of the story that I think is Nolan's own, his take on a certain part of it, that I actually really liked. It is long. It is 3 hours long. It is well-paced. I had no problem sitting there. There is no intermission.
Wait a minute. You're telling me that this is a movie about a sea voyage and it's 3 hours.
It's a three-hour tour
even.
And they do does land the weather, on many an uncharted desert island.
Does the weather get rough and toss their tiny ship?
Many times. So you heard
my
it here
God,
first.
Homer invented Gilligan's Island. How have we never thought of this before? Sure.
Yes.
Should have known from the Iliad, you know, Achilles and his little buddy, Patroclus.
Yep. Yeah, little buddy, pool boys, more like it. Yeah, that's obviously not in here. So, yes, would I recommend The Odyssey? Yes, I would. So there you go.
Nice, all right.
You're required by law to see it in a theater.
Yeah.
And you have to go see it in one of the only 40 theaters worldwide that can actually show it in its original aspect ratio, which is the 70mm IMAX. So thank you, Nolan, for that. Basically telling me, unless you're one of these rich people, because apparently they're charging like $1,000 a seat for this.
What?
Because there's only 40 theaters in the world.
Oh.
Unless you're one of these hyper-rich people, you don't get to see the real version of my movie. Suck it, Tribeca. Suck it long. Suck it hard. But now we're going to get back to this week's film, Billionaire Boys Club.
The facts.
Budget, $15 million. Not too much for 2018. Well, we know this isn't going to be good, and it's not. 2.7 million. Yeah, there's reasons.
Owie.
Oh, and it gets worse. On opening day, it made a grand total of $126. That's $126.
You mean $126,000, right?
No.
Oh.
Part of the reason it was only on 12 screens. This movie is pretty much a remake of a TV series or a miniseries from 1987. And who starred as Joe Hunt in that? Why, Judd Nelson, who plays Joe's dad in this movie.
And his nostrils.
Yes. Kevin Spacey. Yeah, let's get to him. So there had been sexual misconduct allegations against him, and they were pretty much a big thing when this movie was set to come out, which likely led to its poor performance, or at least it's one of the reasons.
Wouldn't have helped.
A previous film of his, All the Money in the World, trimmed him out a lot to try and avoid this issue. Yeah.
All the money in the world.
Yeah. This movie was delayed possibly because of some of the facts above. It was also filmed in 2015 to 2016, but it was not released until 2018. Nepotism, plain and simple, from the eighth dimension. Cassian Elwes produced this film, so who did he get to play Andy Warhol? His brother, Cary. Why is it always connections?
Cary Elwes?
His play is Andy Warhol. Did you not catch that?
Okay. Yeah. I did not. He looked so different in the wig.
Yeah. In case you were confused, as we were, well, I was, Harvard School for Boys, not to be confused with Jordan March, Harvard University, there's no connection at all between the two.
None. Yeah. They just use the same name.
Though Baby Driver with Ansel Elgort and Kevin Spacey came out a year earlier, this film was shot first. See above. Yeah. I forgot to see above.
Oh, yeah. By the way, you know, they call me Baby Driver.
They don't. No, there is no they, and no, you aren't.
No matter how hard I try to get people to do it, they just won't.
Hey, they won't call me Mongrel either, but there you go.
Yeah.
excuse me, but this film has a major flaw. When the character Dean says he has a Camaro IROC Z for sale that's from 1979, he must be lying, as we all know the IROC Z was not released until 1985. Movie ruined.
I totally knew that.
Yeah, who cares? There was not much trivia this week.
Yeah.
In the real-life version of this story, Ron Levin's body was never found, and Joe Hunt claimed that Levin wasn't murdered. He'd faked his death. Supposedly, Levin's credit card was used the day after his death, and he'd been seen by a number of people afterwards that knew him. Ah, well, poor Joe.
So he's out on an island with Elvis, JFK, and Batboy.
I think Portugal is one of the places he was seen, so.
Ah, okay.
In a twist no one saw coming, this film sticks pretty close to the events on which it's based. And as I said, there's also not a lot of trivia. Yeah, Max, do you know something?
Not a thing. Never have, never will.
Well, then let's get to El Plato. I don't know why.
Do they call you El Plato?
It's the early 1980s, and a bunch of rich guys are graduating from the Harvard School for Boys in California. All of them are sons of rich people except Joe Hunt. Poor Joe. He only got to go to school because of a scholarship. Skip ahead a couple of years, and the graduates are mostly still rich brats. One of them, Dean, is wheeling and dealing cars to SoCal's rich and famous. He comes across his old buddy Joe and tries to help him out. They meet with Ron, a rich business dude that's buying a car from Dean. Ron's impressed with Joe, for some reason, and suggests that he get into some sort of nebulous business as well. Dean and Joe cook up a Ponzi scheme they call the BBC, seemingly unaware of the British Broadcasting Company. They make some slick business cards and plans and basically rope all their old high school chums into this rather vague plan, partially by pretending to pay off a 150% return on an investment in 3 weeks. Soon the kids are conning their dads and living it up. They even go so far as to purchase a dying gold grinding mine so that they can grind coal and, well, it would take an investment banker to explain it. Everything seems like it's going great, especially since their major investor, Ron, has a big fat disbursement check headed their way. Wait, Ron does have a disbursement check, doesn't he?
Ron?
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 Wait, Ron has been conning the boys? Oh, noes! Well, they're going to have to threaten him to pay up. Oops! Seems Ron got killed.
Awkward.
Well, another one of the boys is an Iraqi prince. No, really. And they can just get money from his dad, who needs help leaving town as he's worried someone's following him. And oops! He ended up dead, too. Well, that's inconvenient. And dang, there's the cops! Now, who the heck called them? Well, Joe's innocent. He didn't do nothing. He swears. Unfortunately, his best buddy Dean gets to the cops first and tells them that Joe did it and he should have immunity and stuff like that. And so he does. And Joe goes to jail. Dean doesn't. And justice is a meal best served cold, or something. The end.
The film.
So, Max.
Yeah.
Had you seen, heard of, knew anything about Billionaire Boys Club?
Oh, yeah. I loved this movie the first time I saw it, when it was called Wall Street.
Interesting. Because I was
thinking liked it the second time I saw it.
It was called Wolf of Wall Street.
Yes.
That is in one of my notes. I think this is what they really wanted to be making. But this is the bottom.
Yeah. That's true indeed. No, I had never seen, heard of, imagined, hallucinated this movie.
Yeah. Well, neither had I, and I think that its lack of 12 screens Mm-hmm. There's 12 screens at my local theater. Problem. Like, you could have filled one theater and that's it.
Yeah, so, yeah.
That's $126. But this movie does have some names in
people.
It. Yeah. The first one is a name that I don't know that well, but I have seen in at least one other film, Baby Driver.
Yep.
That is Ansel Elgort,
which sounds like it's supposed to be an anagram of something.
I think one of his parents was Norwegian, which is one of the... and he was named after Ansel Adams. So there you go.
Oh, okay.
But it also is a name that says, yeah, you didn't change your name, did you? No.
That's, no.
Yeah,
he's competent.
That's all I'm going to give him, too. I liked him in Baby Driver a lot. I thought he was a lot of fun.
He was great in Baby Driver. He hadn't come into his own yet, or he wasn't directed well, or this could possibly be the script.
Yeah.
He's competent. Well,
and here's the thing. Sadly, he needs to be played by somebody else in this film. I'm going to skip somebody for a moment. We'll come back to him. I honestly think they should have had Taron Egerton play his role. Because Dean is way more charismatic.
Well, Taron Egerton is more charismatic. He's also got much more screen presence.
Yeah.
I mean, in this, he's a little baby. He's so cute.
Well, he was also...
Baby Taron.
He was in another film this year. Do you remember that Robin Hood movie?
Oh, God. Was that the same year?
That
awful waste of Morgan Freeman? No,
yeah.
Not Morgan Freeman. Jamie Foxx, excuse me.
Yeah. You were thinking of God. Kevin Hood, which was also a terrible waste of Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like Taron Egerton. The first time I heard him was in the movie Sing, where he plays a gorilla. And I really like that character. And then I saw him in Rocket Man, and he was terrific.
Yeah. And in this, he does a good American accent.
He does. I would never have guessed he was British. He's one of those rare British actors that doesn't either sound like they're overdoing it, Monty Python, or you don't know exactly where they're from, Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah.
And he's charismatic, he needs to be.
Yeah, but his character, Dean, you just don't know anything about him. And honestly, you just don't care.
Well, we'll come back to how much we care about any of the characters.
Yeah.
But.
Well, come on. Let's talk about the 1,000-pound elephant in the room. I'm going to come back to that line.
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey.
What the hell does that mean?
That's
the saddest, skinniest.
That is even baby elephants weigh more than 1,000 pounds. These guys weigh up to like 10, 20 tons.
Yeah. So.
Anyway.
Yeah. Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
I mean, he's good. He's Kevin Spacey good. However, there are times when I'm like, you're scooping out Joe Hunt. Like,
you're looking at these guys a little funny. I'm not crazy about that. Yeah.
I was expecting there to be some sort of hanky-panky, at least attempted, between those two, because this was done right around the time when the allegations were coming out, I think. And, if you watch this performance, you can kind of believe them because he's really creepy in occasional moments. But also, I got to say, one of my notes, it says, prediction, Ron is playing them all. And sure enough.
You pegged it. Yeah.
Did you?
I did not.
Oh,
I really didn't. I thought he was going to be the Gordon Gekko figure.
Yeah.
But I also got to say, Kevin, don't try playing Jewish.
Is he supposed to be 11? Of course he is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I didn't even notice.
Every time he uses Yiddish, it sounds like you can hear the pause. Like, so is this guy Meshuggah or what?
I didn't even notice. I mean, he's no Alan Alda, but hey, I grew up believing Alan Alda was Jewish and he's like Presbyterian, but whatever.
Yeah.
It is not an outstanding performance by Kevin Spacey, but it's a solid one, which
is
sad.
It's a good one. And again, it's some of the script.
Yeah.
And then we've got Julia Roberts' niece.
Emma Roberts.
Who did a very nice job as Julia Roberts' niece.
Here's the thing. She's got literally nothing to do. And the way they handle the character is so terrible. Because at the end of the film, she's moving out. And my note was, wait, when did she move in?
Like, yeah. You know nothing about... Hey, look, she's got a show. Oh, that's nice. Where? How?
Of what?
Is she an actual artist? I wasn't clear. I knew she worked for one.
Apparently she was, but we don't get to see any of her art because that's not the main focus.
No, the women in the movie are mostly there for decoration.
Yeah, sadly. You know, very much decoration. She's fine, but she's got nothing to do. Nothing. Ryan Rotmore is doing his best. Sean, what is his name from Dude, Where's My Car?
And Sean Leonard.
Yeah, he's a three-namer. Donatello, Michelangelo, whatever his name is.
Smith. Yeah, yeah.
He plays one of those annoying rich bros that you hate, and he does a great job at it because I hated him.
Well, that describes actually both him, Jeremy Irvine, and Thomas Cockerell.
Yeah, that's I'd change that real quick.
Yeah.
One of the better performances, as tiny as it was actually by Bokeem Woodbine. He plays Tim Dorman, who also eventually becomes Tim the Assassin.
Yeah, who has a great sense of both calm and quiet menace about him.
Yeah.
But he has like four lines.
Yeah. Also, I know they were trying to keep to a true story, but sadly, when they're going to bury Ron, my thought was, you're next, Dean.
Yeah.
Tim doesn't want any witnesses. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And then there's some people.
There's some other people.
Oh, Carrie Elwes is Andy Warhol, who's quite honestly terrible.
Yeah, he's not very convincing. He's trying. It's just so easy to portray Andy Warhol as a cartoon.
Well, have you ever seen any interviews with Andy Warhol?
Yeah, a long time ago. I saw Dick Cavett. And by the way, I checked. Yes, he was on an episode of The Love Boat.
Yeah, he was.
Season 9, Episode 3, Picture from the Past.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know who does a great Andy Warhol?
Bill Hader.
David Bowie.
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
There's a movie called Basquiat, which is worth seeing, which is really good.
That makes absolutely
perfect. And David Bowie he's only got a tiny part in a restaurant, but he's such a good Andy Warhol. It's really good. So the acting in this film, except for Ansel Elgort, who I think, and again, they should have switched. Taron Egerton should have been him.
Yeah.
It's fine. The acting is generally fine. It's not the problem.
Perfectly competent, even from Judd Nelson and both of his nostrils.
Oh, yeah. We think he's going to be the drunk dad or something. And he's working two jobs. So that's why he literally sleeps through most of the movie.
Yep.
That's always a good sign. You know what else is a good sign?
Right.
When the film starts and there are four production companies, none of which you'd ever heard of.
Yeah, you know it's going to be good then. Yeah.
Oh, dear. So we start off with this birthday party that Dean
We don't start with that. My first note is suddenly I'm thirsty for Maxell recording tape.
Oh, yeah. When they reproduce the damn ad for Maxell.
Yes. Which is like, okay, you get it? This is the 1980s. Get it?
Yeah, I got it. I don't like it.
Yep.
And I don't even know why they did that. Like,
it didn't, I don't either. It has nothing to do with anything.
Rock and roll or recording tape or any of that stuff. So whatever. But yeah, so we have Dean finds Joe trying to sell things, I guess. I don't know what he's doing.
He's selling cars.
Yeah, no, Dean's selling cars. I don't know what Joe is doing.
He's trying to business.
What the business? Sadly, he's bad at it. And
yes,
that doesn't really change throughout the film.
That's an unfortunate thing because we're supposed to believe that Joe is this incredibly charismatic, eloquent speaker, this guy who can... Basically, he wants us to think he's Leonardo DiCaprio from Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
Who can, just by his confidence and eloquence, sway people.
Yeah.
And he can't.
Well, and initially...
We're supposed to believe he can, but I don't believe it. I'm sorry. And honestly, that's not all his fault.
No.
The speeches he's given, they are, shall we say, not exactly the St. Crispin Day speech. They are not inspiring, moving, or convincing.
Well, I got to ask you a question. When he goes to sell the product to the other billionaire brats club, did you have any idea what they were actually doing?
Nope.
We're going to do this thing. It's a paradox because stupid is smart. And I'm like, what? I couldn't figure out what he was trying to sell them on.
Yeah, it was just, I think it was an investment firm.
Well,
I mean, his whole thing is, what does BBC stand for? What are we? Are we a social club? Are we an investment group? Are we a think tank? Nobody knows. Yeah, including any of you.
Yeah. And to be fair, the... classmates, shall we say, are
these are what we would now call finance bros.
Yes, very much finance bros. And they all have one thing in common, which I understand, which is that they don't have any of their own money. It all comes from dad. And all of them are feeling that pressure to perform. And
they resent it.
None of them probably will because they're all kind of not smart.
Yeah.
There is this first, and this is one of the turning points we're supposed to have with Joe's character, which is, oh, he figures out how to sell this paradox thing where whatever. And that's
down. Bad is good.
Yeah, and he turns a corner, and now he's that guy he was always meant to be, except he doesn't, because the next time he has to do this, he nearly screws it up. And then the next time he needs to do it, he nearly screws it up.
Yeah.
Like, the character never becomes, I hate to put it this way, he never becomes Taron Egerton, because he needs to become Taron Egerton really badly, and he never does. So, yeah, besides this, the people that were hanging around in this film, we go to this birthday party for Charlie Bottoms, particularly useful for this little series.
Charlie Buttocks, yes.
I'm sure he does. And it's basically a case of, wow, I hate everybody.
Yeah, it's like, well, I want all of these people at this table to have something heavy fall on them.
Yeah. And then once they leave that group, they decide to go visit Kevin Spacey. And it's like, oh,
yeah. From bad to worse.
I'm trying to
think.
And
Kevin...
How many times has Kevin Spacey played a character that we actually like?
I thought he played a likable guy in American Beauty.
Come on, I liked Verbal Johnson. Next door girl in that film.
Yes, briefly. Yeah, but he was
nice in K-Pax, although that was a forgettable film. I enjoy his character in Usual Suspects, but
yeah,
in the end,
I mean, Verbal is likable initially.
Oh well, I don't want to. In case there's somebody out there that has not seen that film, I will not give away the spoiler to that. But he's generally not a nice person. And he isn't in this
Pay
film
It Forward, yet. He was a nice person.
Oh, I didn't see that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he's done some.
Has he done
but
any musical
he's much
theater?
Better at playing a villain or a sleaze.
Don't move, slime ball.
Yeah, so.
Thank you, Gandhi 2.
Hey, it's applicable, isn't it? Applicable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've got a whole passel of characters that we kind of don't really like, because while Joe isn't one of them, his aspirations are to become one of them, or potentially the worst of them.
That's the thing, you're supposed to get invested in the characters even if you don't actually like them.
I see what you did there. Invested in the characters.
I'm so clever.
You sly worm, you.
Yep. Thinking of the others, like Wolf of Wall Street and Wall Street. Gordon Gekko is horrible, but you're fascinated by him. You want to see what he's doing. And you're watching Charlie Sheen just bury himself in this world, but you still feel for him. Leonardo DiCaprio, sleazebag in that movie.
And
you are fascinated. Part of me wanted to see him succeed.
Well, and see, we did Wolf of Wall Street in the show, I think.
Yes,
so
we did.
Episode, I am not in general a fan of Leonardo DiCaprio, especially when he's with...
No.
Well, there are times I do
you
like him.
Me.
I liked him fine in Titanic. He was fine. There was a film called The Basketball Diaries. He's excellent in it. That's an unhappy film. Although the main character, if you look into him, it's a real person named Jim Carroll, is actually really interesting and did some song. There's actually one song you've heard of called These Are People Who Died. That's him. But there are times I think that Leonardo DiCaprio is well launched or well used.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, Scorsese just likes to use him for everything, and I don't think he's the right person. Like The Aviator. Sorry, I didn't buy it. It just didn't work.
Or Gangs of New York.
Well, I had other problems with that. But in Wolf of Wall Street, everything to hate about that film. Remember, that's where we got that aphorism. Remember,
toss,
don't stack.
Don't stack.
Want to keep your whores healthy? Toss, don't stack. But you're right. Even though you don't like the character, and you never do, you are fascinated and you want to
you're
see where
invested.
This is going to go.
You want to know what's going to happen. In this movie, not at all.
No.
None of them.
No.
We're supposed to kind of like Joe because he's like supposed to be the nice guy who was thrown in with the sharks. You know how we know he's a nice guy who was thrown in with the sharks? Because Emma Roberts' character tells us. She says he could have been anything. He could have, but you guys ruined him. Or I think he blames Los Angeles or California. Or
he could have been a contender.
The In-N-Out Burger. I don't know.
In-N-Out Burger,
yeah.
Which is okay. I've been there. So and the big thing too is that they don't really play this up enough. Is that he gets sold out by his best friend in the end. Dean, mm-hmm. and Dean does tell him at one point, don't trust anybody. Yeah. And, you know, he proves it.
Yeah.
And in the real story, Dean got off. And yeah. there's at least one of the other boys club members, whatever you want to, boys club for men. He's also a client.
I guarantee it.
Who also testified for not being prosecuted. And after that went through, went on a talk show and say, yeah, I was there when they killed so-and-so. And it wasn't geez. Ron, it was the other guy. The Saudi, or the Iraqi prince's dad.
The Persian, yes. It,
whatever. So
that's how he's listed.
I know. And the sad thing is that's what I looked into this. It's like, oh, that's really what, I was like, really? Iraqi prince? We're going to play this card? Oh, it really happened. Okay. Mm. So, yeah, it's, Joe gets sold out. And apparently his family has been fighting along with him since this, because it's like, there's no body, there's no direct evidence except that list that he made of things they wanted to do.
Yeah.
So they didn't play up enough the idea that Joe was tainted by these people, because Joe kind of seems to instigate a lot of it too. I don't know.
He starts out fairly sleazy. I mean, he's clearly an operator. He's.
Do you want to be more sleazy? Sure, we all do.
Ron says, you're like me. And I know he's just kind of trying to not get killed in that moment, but he's not wrong.
Yeah.
They have nothing real. They just have the ability to charm people.
Yeah. And unfortunately, when that's something your movie really relies on and all the speeches and wow moments fall flat, we have a problem. I would like to make note of the reemergence of the Milton Berle myth because...
Ah, yes.
Last scene, and was it the Ricardos? Is that what that movie was?
Yeah, I think it was that one.
Apparently that was true. And if you don't know what we're referring to, let's say Milton Berle was multi-talented.
Let's just say little Milton was not so little.
No.
He's famous for that. He allegedly, when he showed up on the set of Saturday Night Live before he hosted, he gave them a look.
Yeah, well, because he likes to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And it made everyone really comfortable and felt like...
Oh, very much, very comfortable, very comfortable.
And I think, too, that even though this is based on a true story, Joe's... consistently coming back to this weird set of morals doesn't really play out and doesn't make sense to me. Did it work for you?
No, it really doesn't. I don't believe that he has any kind of moral compass. They want to be rich. He wants to be rich. He resents the rich kids for being rich. He's probably resents his father for not being rich.
To be fair, the one thing I will say the film does point out is that you don't get to be that rich and not be a jerk. That's just the way it goes. So,
nope.
How did you think the pacing went in this film? It's not long.
Oh, good. No, it's not a long film, but it feels like a long film. I thought the pacing dragged a lot of places.
Yeah.
And they're which is terrible because they're trying to give you this sense of frenetic energy and the get rich quick of the 80s and the party lifestyle and everything happening fast. And it's like, it's happening fast. Why am I checking my watch so often?
Well, and some of this, I'm guessing, is about investing in things. The world of investment banking is a very fast-paced, moving, you're old if you're 30 and still doing this kind of thing. And we never actually see them buy anything. We see them go and try and talk to this.
Well,
this,
we know they buy gold.
Then they stop buying gold because,
Everybody
will tell you, gold is incredibly fluctuable. And sure enough, there was a big drop and, you know, Ron sat there and grinned at them going, oh, you don't still have money in gold, do you, Joe? Do you? And of course they do. Yeah, I also thought that the story and generally the scenes do not progress smoothly. It's kind of jerky.
There's some editing in there that is just odd. There is the scene where Joe and Sydney have sex for the first time, and it's supposed to be all romantic and erotic. And they're intercutting scenes from the floor of the New York Stock Exchange.
Well, sometimes you're up and sometimes you're down.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, I guess he was like selling short or something.
There you go.
Yeah.
Maybe a little premature bidding.
It shouldn't be funny. It's jarring and it doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, the sex scene, what there was of it, because there wasn't really that much.
No.
It wasn't really all that interesting. Quite honestly, there's not really... That's it for sex. Like, there really isn't any.
There's a lot of, I'm hot, and that's it.
Well, and we get to see the women, at least partially, are mostly nude. And, of course, the guys don't even take their shirts off, which I found very annoying.
I'm sure.
But yeah, although quite honestly, I have this feeling that Ansel is, shall we say, in need of a sandwich.
Yeah. Yes. I'm betting there is not a chest hair to be found. But I also got to say, there are just some plot, there are many plot elements that don't work in this.
Give me one of yours. I'll give you one of mine.
Okay. Mine is, first of all, Dean gets all stressed out because he's guarding the comatose Persian prince.
Right.
So he says, I'm going to try smoking pure opium for the first time.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to do anything to him. It has no effect. And when afterwards, it's sort of gone. Also, he falls off a balcony, very clearly dislocates his shoulder, and then he's fine.
Well,
then
he's going on, the opium. Mm-hmm. If you will, if you looked into this, opium resets any dislocations you might have.
I did not know that.
It is true. Totally, totally.
Yeah.
That's one of mine was they go through this whole process where the entire BBC, and I do mean Billionaire Boys Club, not the British Boys, that drove me nuts the whole time, but that is actually true. That's what they called it. They sit there.
How did no one make that connection?
I don't know. I can't even guess. But they sit there as a team and they figure out a list of the stuff they're supposed to do. And everybody has a little part they're going to play. And so, except when they go and actually do it, there's only two people there. Where's the rest of the team? Where'd they all go?
Yeah.
Why aren't they there? It's just Tim and Joe. Or no, Tim. Yeah. No, it's Tim and Dean. Yeah. No, it's Tim and Joe. Joe is there, but he didn't do it. That's right. Dean is there and he kills the Iraqi prince's dad. Because, sure.
Why not?
I also want to know who calls the cops and why.
Well, there's some implication that Sydney did. She says soon everyone's going to know.
Yeah, but I don't think she would have done that. I think she wants to leave Joe because, let's face it, why wouldn't you? But what was she calling them about? She didn't know.
Yeah, she just knew something happened to Ron, but she had no idea what.
Well, she knew that she asked where he was and they wouldn't answer her. So she suspected something had happened. But like there was nothing to find. Joe or Ron was just not home. Like that's not a crime to not be home.
Especially for a con man. Of course he would have disappeared.
Well, and here's something they did leave out from the original story. In the original story, the real story, if you will, Ron was apparently out on bail for having been a naughty boy.
Who's a naughty boy?
And he basically skipped town. That was the deal. And one of the reasons they said that they think that he faked his death is because he was asking about extradition rules between here and Portugal. And he was asking about dyeing one's hair and other sorts of things. So there's a pretty good chance that he actually did not die. And he wandered off just like other people who wander off and are never seen again that are known as people wanderers.
Fugitives, I think.
Yeah. So I couldn't figure out. It's like, who called the cops and why are they arresting him? Arresting him for what?
Yeah, they don't have a body.
No. Or as far as I can tell, any particular charge yet. Now, they won't have to look hard to find one, but, you know.
No. Yeah. I mean, I think he would be more up on financial crimes.
Yeah.
But they say they never find Ron's body. So without a, what is it, corpus delicti or some such, you can't convict him.
Yeah. But apparently you can.
Yeah, apparently.
And there's this twist in the end where we see Dean sell Joe out. What did you think about the twist?
What twist? I knew Dean was going to sell him out.
Really?
Yeah. Dean seems like the wormy guy in this. He's someone you can't really trust. He's drug-addled.
He would have been drug-addled if it actually worked.
he's the one who's always doing coke.
Well, it was 80s, Max. Everybody did coke. You must have... No, I didn't either.
No, I did a lot of diet coke. Does that count?
No. Especially really, not unless he snorted it up a straw.
That really hurts, by the way. When you snort it, I didn't get any kind of benefit from it. Anyway.
I only know it going the other direction, but whatever.
Yeah.
So, I didn't see it coming, but it really, at that point, I'm just like...
It didn't surprise me.
He sold him out. Huh. Now, what do you know?
Yeah, hey. And apparently and what do you think about the message at the end of the film?
Don't be bad.
No, the real wealth are the friends you make along the way. As he's saying, we had each other and we gave that up. No, you didn't have each other. You met years after high school and
just for fun, here's a list of some other bottom feeders of 2018.
Okay.
Solo, A Star Wars Story, which I actually liked. There was a remake of Death Wish with Bruce Willis. Did you see that?
No, I vaguely remember that it happened.
Yeah.
That was it.
That Robin Hood movie with Taron Egerton we told about. And Holmes and Watson with Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly. I hear that was great.
I think that was the biggest bomb the two of them did together.
Yeah. Mortal Engines, which is about giant cities attacking each other in post-apocalyptic
Mortal Engines!
Rah, 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 rah!
Finish him!
What a
different movie, right?
Sure. But according to the clock on the wall, we are at that point. We got to decide if we liked Billionaire Boys Club.
Yeah, wait for the big reveal.
The finish.
So, Max.
No, I didn't like it.
Okay.
Surprise!
Wasn't going to be my first question, but sure. You didn't like it. Now, why, Max?
Not.
Why didn't you like this film?
Like I said, first off, it's trying to be two better films.
Mm-hmm.
Second off, the story doesn't hold together. I don't care if it's a true story or not. The way they've adapted it isn't good.
Yeah.
The acting is profoundly mediocre, even from some people who are pretty good normally. The script is terrible. The pacing is bad. I think the editing is bad. I just don't think I can understand why this movie tanked, regardless of Mr. Spacey's little help.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a complete waste of time.
Yeah.
What about you?
Never heard of it. Didn't know anything about it. We looked it up and said, well, that's the lowest. $126. It's going to be hard to beat that. And sure enough, they didn't. My last note was unsatisfying, not good. You don't care about any of these people because they're horrible. The ones that are supposed to be competent enough to be interesting aren't. I will say, I think Taron Egerton does a great job. He's charismatic. You believe that he wheels and deals. Mm-hmm. You aren't really all that surprised. Well, at least Max wasn't when he sells out his best friend. He does fine. Kevin Spacey turns in a solid performance, but not a great one. And the other ones are fine. You know, there's nothing good or bad. There's nothing memorable about them. But the script is terrible. I don't care that it was based on a real story. The only time I get pissed off when they adjust real story stuff is when they utterly change what actually happened to make a better story. Here, maybe I wouldn't have minded it so much. Yeah. it's not Wolf of Wall Street. It so wants that Wolf of Wall Street money.
Oh, God.
I've never seen Wall Street, so I don't know that one. But it really felt like, do you remember that film and the way they sold it, the film Ruby, the man who shot JFK. It's like, well, JFK was big. Oh, somebody here did Oswald. Well, how about Ruby? We're going to do a Ruby. And it's like, well, it's not Wall Street and it's not Wolf of Wall Street, but it's real too.
So, and it's money. And this one's in California.
Sure. Like that matters. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
So no, I understand why it is a bottom performer for 2018.
Yeah.
I even understand why it was actually don't understand why it was actually fairly easy to rent and find, but whatever. But hey, if you're looking to watch, maybe you're a Taron Egerton fan. I like Taron Egerton. He's a nice guy. I like his acting.
Yeah.
If you're a Taron Egerton completist, don't bother. He's good, but the rest of it's not.
He's got other stuff you can watch that's better. Hell, watch that weird-ass Robin Hood movie.
No, don't even watch that. All I remember about it is it was boring. So, but you know it is good, and that is our poll question. We would like to know, what is the last great movie you saw in the theater, and why is it great? There's so many films out there, but there's only
Mike, how can they tell us? How can they tell us, Mike? How?
If you had shut up, I would have continued and told you.
Never!
Yes, unfortunately, that is Max's theme song, Never.
Never!
How do you get in touch with us? Well, you could email us directly, as does Bill O'Lading, at us at maxmikemovies.com. Go ahead and answer the question. Give us an idea for a series. We're getting really close to episode 400 in how to put this.
We
ain't got no ideas.
Help us!
Yeah. Give us an idea or, you know, say, hey, you guys should add this film to this series or, hey, give us an idea for a series. We had one recently from one of our listeners and we may actually act on that one because it sounded pretty good. You can also go to our website, maxmikemovies.com, leave a comment there like Vince does. Hey, cheese boy, it's been a while. Just saying.
But
leave a comment. Same thing. Ideas about the show. Liked it, didn't like it, so on and so forth. You can, of course, find us on social media as long as it's Blueski and or Facebook, because we're there. That's where most of you answer your questions. And that is Max Mike Movies in both places. every podcast app known to man, blah, 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 blah. And of course, our hotline, otherwise known as the Doris line at this point, because we had, you know, we have not heard from real Julia Roberts in a long time. I hope she's okay. She must be busy.
I hope she's not mad at me for putting down her niece in this movie.
You know, you may have ruined our chances, but if you're out there,
real Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Didn't mean to offend you.
Give us a call at 617-398-7266. That number again, 617-398-7266. But we have to roll some dice because it's now time to choose.
You mean activate the Maxotron 9 million.
I am rolling the dice. It's my turn and they're dice. So first off, 20th.
You're ruining the magic.
There's no magic, Max. This is dice. You're thinking.
Okay.
So first off, we have to roll for, is it 20th or 21st century?
Yeah.
Oh, looks like it's going to be 20th century. Oh, I haven't done one of those since the first one. So now I'm going to roll my percentiles. Purple's controlling. Okay. If you don't know what that means, too bad. Yeah. And a year is going to be 1963. And we're going to start off with the low performer. What the low performer is for 1963.
Oh, we got, looks like a science fiction epic.
Oh, I love science fiction films.
The day Mars invaded Earth. I
was absent that day.
It was a weird day. I was supposed to go on a field trip, but I missed it.
The day Mars invaded Earth.
Earth.
That one's so good. I've never heard of it. Have you, Max?
Yeah. No, it's probably an underground cult hit or it was so controversial so scary. Oh God, we're doomed. Anyway,
from Mars
1963, the day Mars invaded Earth. Nanu Nanu, I guess.
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.